Well, Marcus, England have won the Headingley Test. So now it's 2-1. The Ashes still alive. England holding on. Another ripper Test match there, and a little bit to take away from that one.
Oh, so much to take away from it, Vanders. Possibly too much to take away. I mean, they've taken the entire Test away from the next time the Ashes will be there. But yes, so much to unpack there, Vanders. I really don't know where are we going to start?
No, there's a lot to talk about, as well as in the Women's Ashes with England taking out the Inter-Series 2020 series as well and keeping their hopes alive. So we're going to touch on that later as well. But we are going to start on Headingley, and let's get into it.
Now, Vanders, I realise that we've only got a limited amount of time in the podcast. People unfortunately don't have forever. We do, because there's nothing going on in our lives. But I wanted to really try and convey the roller coaster of emotion that you and I go through over the 4 days, and even are still going through now. I do want to get the listener to understand just how passionately we do feel about it. And I think the best way to do that is to share with our listeners our group chat, which comprises of you, me, Alex Jansen. Could you sum up Alex Jansen in 10 words? Is that even possible?
No,
more like an idea, isn't it?
Just a tragic cricket grumpy man, I would say.
And Harry Galligan, who, look, he's contract. I don't want to call him out, but like nationally, internationally, as we've discovered our podcast goes, minimal contribution, I would say, from Galligan in the group chat.
No, absolutely not. But he is our man on the spot in Edinburgh. So he's our man on the ground for the Ashes at the moment. And we might get him on later in the pod. But I like this, Tails. It's not normal for people to be sharing group chat conversation publicly.
It's very dangerous. We had to get this episode legal, dear listener.
Yeah.
Just to make sure it was okay to go to air.
But I like your idea of going through, rather than just going through the big moments after, let's have a chat what we're thinking at the time and see if we can define it via those group chat messages.
First one here, Vanders, and this came from Jensen. Please tell me that's Photoshop. What was he thinking? What was happening when he wrote that?
Well, this is a great start, because we've got to talk about Mitch Marsh and inclusion.
Mitchell.
Was that Photoshop the team list at the toss? Cam Green, slight hamstring strain going to it, so it was confirmed. The rumours were true this time. Mitch Marsh has marked his run for the right reason. What a game did Mitch Marsh had. If you were 4 for 60 or 4 for 80 when he came in, and you're thinking, is Mitch Marsh the man to recover it for us? Everyone would have said no. It's unbelievable, the innings he played, Tails. Have you seen better?
Firstly, nobody ever thought he was ever going to play Test cricket again. Nobody thought that. Even when he was included in the tour, nobody genuinely thought.
Well, he didn't think it. He discussed that his holiday was been interrupted by being selected. He was just having a good time.
He's played 4 first-class matches in 4 years. And anyway, so he's selected, which is extraordinary in itself. We're 4 for 80. And we all think, well, we're fucked now. Like, honestly, we think we're genuinely done. And even though he played a couple of nice shots early and then nicked one to slip and got dropped by Joe Root. And then from then on, and this is the weirdest part about it, he looks so assured.
He looked like the best batsman technically in Australia.
Honestly, I know Aussie's been terrific and Trav Head has obviously been quite effective. But if you're just talking like, if you were looking at him going, who is the most confident and most sort of assured and most crisp batsman that Australia have had in this entire series? You look at Mitch Marsh and go, oh, surely he's made 400 runs in the series. He was just so clear-headed in the way that he played. His footwork, forward or back, was excellent. He picked the ball up so early. Like, he pulled Mark Wood, who we'll get to shortly. He pulled Mark Wood through mid-on. Like, barely anybody else can lay a bat on him. He was pulling him through mid-on. Extraordinary innings.
He looked unbelievable. And what a great story for Australian cricket as well, because, you know, Mitch Marsh even himself said he was the most hated person in Australian cricket. And to go and do that is a really nice feeling story. I think he won over a lot of the Australian public. But then he just went as quickly as he came, just over before lunch, I think it was. Just nicked off. And
century in a session.
See you later. All right, Tails. You should go with this one, because it's I was the texter on this particular group chat moment. So what's our next group chat revealing match
Look,
moment?
Look, again, this is one that I think needs further examination from our listeners. This is the worst part about watching the Ashes. This is terrible. This is so frustrating. Harry Vanderwood types often, drops in the group chat often. I'm delayed. Vanders, for fuck's sake, get a TV. We can't. You want us to live on the edge and ride or die with you this entire series.
The modern man doesn't have a TV free to wear. It's all about live streaming.
I think Jensen said later on, you are not a modern man.
And unfortunately, Nine Now, not the amazing work that your team does at Seven Tails, but Nine Now, just the delay there. But Nine Now, unfortunately, there's a delay there. And you just end up, you're about 30 seconds after. So when Australia's batting and you get a message to the group chat saying, oh, fuck, why did he do that? And then you're just thinking, oh, no, you're about to see a terrible wicket. So great when you're bowling. Really exciting to have a spoiler when you're about to get a wicket. But, yeah, that came up a lot in the group chat. But, yeah, no TV. Sorry, I'm just a common man.
Extraordinarily frustrating. And to all our dear listeners, if you are going to join a group chat for the Ashes, you all have to be on the same thing. You all have to be on TV. I'm going to rent you a TV the next time the Ashes come around. 2027, they might not even have normal TV then, but I'm going to rent you one.
We'll probably be there. We'll probably be potting live.
Yes, of course.
All right, Tails. Next cab off the rank. There's a few swear words in these, so I'll try and keep it PC. From Alex Jensen again, was this so fast in Australia? What's that referring to?
What was the word you missed out there, Pandas?
Was this so fast in Australia?
Oh, Mark Wood, and to be fair, I kind of agree with Jensen. We've seen him bowl. We watched him bowl in Hobart, didn't we? And he was good. Had never really done a lot. Like, he hadn't taken over Test cricket and say the way Jofra Archer probably is his best comparison in recent times. Hadn't really, you know, taken it over like Jofra did. But he was just so rapid. And the difference it makes, how good is the difference? And rapid, but also wasn't wasting it. Like, he genuinely, it wasn't as if he was just coming in like, you know, Brett Lee and just spraying it everywhere. He was rapid. He was on target. What did you think of the way they used him, though? Because they used him really curiously.
Yeah, I think it was smart. Just sort of short, sharp burst. Didn't open the bowling. And then just came. Just as you said, his control. The seam was perfect. Pitched it up. Almost not like a Jofra. Not an aggressive bowler with his pace, almost, in a weird way. Not that Mitch Johnson, Jofra Archer, but just made the Australian batsman look uncomfortable. And, you know, for England to be praying that that he's fit for the last two tests, because he obviously wasn't fit for Lords. But you think, you know, if you get five tests out of him, it's a different series. So it was a pleasure to watch, to be honest. It was an absolute brutish spell of fast bowling, and the second fastest since Brett Lee in England. So, you know, it just shows you how fast it truly was. And it can be confusing sometimes with the miles per hour on the screen, trying to pin it all together, but he's bowling 155 plus for a whole spell, and it's just incredible to watch. All right, Tails, you referenced earlier about Mark Wood's batting. I know this group chat message from Alex Jensen was about Mark Wood's batting and Stokes' batting in the first innings.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck are we doing? Alex Jensen dropped into the group chat, and that was in reference to Mark Wood and Ben Stokes just getting off the leash. I think Australia had a lead of about 100 before that, and really should have bowled England out for no less than a lead of Australia, having a lead of no less than 70 or 80. In the end, it ended up getting down into the 20s. And that is a huge moment in this match. We're going to talk a little bit more, but both teams had chances to really put the other team into the ground. And this is a moment with Australia's short pitch bowling that England pretty much got parity and you know, if Australia get that lead of 70, then they win the match. So that was a key moment. Tactically, they've continued to go the bounces, but you just have to wonder if they need to be more of the surprise ball, Marcus, than the every single ball, because a tail ender's not hitting a surprise ball over for six every time. But if they know it's going to be short, they can swing through it. And that's what we saw from Stokes, who's obviously not a tail ender, but also Mark Wood.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yes, we haven't come up with a great plan to consistently get Stokes out, particularly when he starts to go on these little runs. It also didn't help. I think they brought Todd Murphy on and he suffered a little bit at the hands of Stoke as well. So it wasn't just all the bouncer barrage. But I think if you looked at the Australia first innings where Wokes, who again we'll chat about a little bit more, Wokes got pulled, I think, in front of square for six three times. Now, Wokes isn't rapid, but at the same time, if that's the deck, like, then you're probably the bouncy barrage isn't the way to go. And they couldn't even trouble, like, Travis Head after lunch looked quite comfortable against a short ball. I'm not saying it was a slow deck or anything like that. It just clearly was not a tactic that was working whereas perhaps it previously had, and they shouldn't have gone for it. And as you were right, that was the difference in the test. That was where the test was lost for Australia. It wasn't, you know, the captaincy on the last day or anything like that. It was that hour where they scored whatever it was, close to 100 runs, I think, between Stokes, Wokes and Wood. So, yeah, that was the hour they're going to have to go back and regret. And I don't think they can bowl like that at Old Trafford or the Oval.
No, we've had these conversations with different teams over different periods of time, and it does seem to be very popular to go straight to the bouncer. But at the end of the day, if you've got Mitch Stark bowling, or even Patrick Cummins, 140, 145, then full balls at the stump, or if you've got Joe Root nicking out outside off stump, then you're going to have a tail end of nicking out outside off stump as well. So I'll have to review that. They almost played into England's ego a little bit with those bounces. But yeah, that was certainly one moment that lost that they could have nailed England to the mast, and they didn't. And we'll talk about a few more later in the pod. All right, next up on Big Test Moments by a group chat, it is Marcus Taylor with, "Honestly, I fucking love it." Talk me through that one, Tails. What was that in reference to?
That was in reference to the Moeen Ali move.
Oh, sure.
I fucking love it, and I loved it at the time. I said straight away I loved it. Yes, he didn't make many runs, but again, I don't understand how this quite works. But for some reason, he made their batting look so much deeper when he was batting at 3 instead of 7.
Mm.
Instead of being, you know, you've got your flaky Bairstow and then Ali doesn't make many at 6 and 7, then it moved Stokes down the order 1. Oh. More importantly, it moved Harry Brook down the order back down to number 5.
Yeah.
And Harry Brook was the difference in the chase.
I don't
the
know if I...
The difference between him batting at 3 and 5 was
much. Yeah. I don't know if in this case, I agree that it's worked, but I think also it had the potential to start a roll of pressure and wickets if Ali got out early, which it didn't, but I like, you know, changing it up is good for a chase, and England did treat it like a one-day game, and which often the order is chased with horses for courses. So
yeah, I think the proof was in the Harry Brook innings, and that's all you needed was just Harry Brook not to come out before Root, Harry Brook to come out after Root. That's all you needed, and that's what they got. Yeah, he probably only batted for 20 minutes and didn't do a particular lot, but it just made the difference. Ben is the last one. I know you wanted to leave this segment, but I couldn't. I need to put more of myself in this.
Sure.
And that's what this podcast is all about. Thanks very much for your follow, everyone. This is where you really miss Nathan Lyon.
Mm. Yeah, good, relevant message. So let's move on to Pat Cummins and how he used Todd Murphy. There's been a little bit of negativity around it, saying he should have got the ball a little bit earlier. He has a spinner. You agree?
Yeah, he should have come on earlier, but at the same time, I don't think there was ever a good time to bring him on.
Mm.
And that says a lot about where Murphy's at. So you watch the way he bowled. He's not a big turner of the ball. He's never going to turn the ball enough to threaten anyone on that pitch.
Mm.
And he sort of tries to sort of hurry, you know, hustle and hurry you and sneak one through rather than necessarily be able to turn one past either the outside or the inside edge. So I don't think there was ever a time to bring him on, even though he should have come on earlier, for what a better term.
Is that because you don't think he's playing very well?
I don't think he was going to do anything on that particular... Root and Brook, I don't think we're ever going to be challenged by Todd Murphy. And it's funny to say, because I do think he should play the last two tests, in part for balance reasons, but I just didn't see him ever getting a wicket on that deck. Maybe he might have got a left-hander out. He probably would have got Moeen Ali out if Moeen Ali was down batting at 7 still. Probably would have got Bairstow out because Bairstow just cannot bat. But, yeah, I genuinely didn't see him threatening. So I don't hold – you mentioned there that Pat Cummins has been in a bit of quote-unquote trouble about it or got some criticism. What else was he supposed to do?
No, I agree. But do you think that Murphy's confidence is then a hit from not being bowled? Or like, I think he's going to feature pretty heavily in the next two tests, and maybe Cummins will put the effort in to bring him in a little bit earlier just to get him into the game maybe.
Yeah, I could believe that. I could absolutely believe that. But I just don't think that you're really worried about trying to get the guy into the game. Like, he doesn't strike me as a guy that suffers a lot with his confidence at all. And I don't think with Bazball, it's not like there's ever going to be a friendly time to bring him in. It's not like they're going to go, oh, you know, we're just going to go sit here and rebuild for 10, 20 overs, you know, and just knock around ones and twos and go at 2.5 and over. They're never going to do that. So I don't think there's really a friendly time to do that. I still think you have to play in that.
Patel, as we talked earlier about, there's some key moments in the match that Australia missed or messed up to really chance to put the foot on the throat and win the Ashes, go up 3-0. One was how they bowled to England's tail in the first innings, but also in the second innings, Australia lost two really quick wickets, Smith and Labuschagne, or Labuschagne and Smith rather, to Moeen Ali's bowling that really hurt us. It was at the end of day two. And just put us in a much tougher position trying to set up a target. And that's another moment where that Marnus Labuschagne brain fade and then Smith just clipping it to mid-wicket was just dumb. And it gave England all the momentum. And if you look at all of the innings, they're all pretty much the same thing happened every day. The team would finish on about 3 for 90, 4 for 90, except for the last day, and go on to make it about 250. So that just really, really hurt and took momentum out of the Australians. And that's another moment they really struggled.
Yeah, I think we spend so much time lauding, and rightly lauding, the batsmen for their amazing feats and for Steve Smith in particular. But those, you're the two best batsmen in the team. We've only got one contribution really out of 12 innings from the pair of you so far. And that, I understand Marnus, I find a little less culpable because at least he was trying to be aggressive. But at the same time, there's one guy out there, mate. There's one guy out there and you've hit it straight down his throat. The Smith thing was so fucking lazy. Like, he is the greatest batsman we've had in the last, I don't know, 15 years. Possibly would be on the pantheon of the top five all-time Australian batsmen. I don't know. But to do that, to just lazily knock Moeen Ali, who is in no way a threat. Moeen Ali is not a threat in this series, should not be considered a threat. And to just sort of lazily knock into mid on, I thought was terrible. And in a game of fine margins, as you've spoken about, that was the margin for me. Between the end of day two, where we couldn't bowl them out, and those two dismissals, absolutely.
Well, interestingly, you think Australia probably had moments to put the foot on the throat and actually dominate England, which they did, and this shows how close the Test match was. But in the same time, Australia's been massively got out of jail by Mitch Marsh in the first innings and then Travis Head in the second innings. So without those innings, they're losing big. So, you know, a lot of us focus on, oh, we could have put England into the ground, but actually we only just got out of trouble twice ourselves, and England also had the chance to put on the throat. So I do genuinely think it's Australia will be kicking themselves for some of those moments. But again, shoes on the other foot, they only just got out of trouble a couple of times. I think a fair result. Every innings was pretty much exactly the same. And in the end, England just got another 250, which was pretty much the pass score and got the win. So, very even Test match. But Tails, just before we move on to sort of talking about the next Test, I think you and I have discussed this on this pod, and it's been around as well in the media. Everyone thinks, you know, Australia have got more gears to go, more levels. Batsmen haven't been scoring. They'll come good. Well, they haven't come good.
No.
They haven't yet come good. And at what stage is it like, well, maybe they won't come good, and maybe it's actually, rather than just not getting on with it, getting a start and not putting in big score, maybe it is a form issue. And that could be a really large concern going forward. So I'm not saying that I'm necessarily worried, but maybe they do have to come good. If they don't, we're in trouble.
So 2019 Ashes, when Warner kept getting out, that to me didn't feel like a form thing. That was just Stuart Broad has worked this out and David Warner has no answer. Is that the same for Marnus?
Marnus in the first Test, it looked like some bit of nerves and a little bit of technique pushing it wide ones, and then he's looked all right so far. He hasn't been all over it, but he's been able to get quick runs, so it just feels a little bit of concentration with Marnus at the moment. Maybe a lack of toughness, want to grind possibly. He just sort of looks like he's there to go and play a few lavish cover drives, and then it's not happening for him, and that's fine. But I think really needs to put the head down.
I think it's more they've worked out how to keep him quiet for a start. Like, I don't think he's getting out before his time, for want of a better term. I think they've just worked out how to keep him quiet and not give him scoring options, because he's got to start in the last four innings.
Mm.
He's faced 295 balls for the series. So he has been out there a bit. He's facing 50 balls an innings, basically.
Mm.
It's not as if they're all over him or anything like that. So I don't see it as form. I genuinely see as they've restricted his scoring areas. They're just going to keep hammering away as closely as they can around that off stump and then just occasionally throw out a loose one, and he's taken the bait.
Yeah, he's getting out in the dirty 30s the whole way through. I think, yeah, before we move on to the next test, that Taz, just as a series as a whole, I think 2-1's probably a fair representation of where it's at. Someone mentioned to me earlier in the week that it could be 3-0 England or 3-0 Australia, and it wouldn't be that far-fetched. So I'd say that 2-1 is a reasonable score at this stage based on form. So we can move on now to Old Trafford with some selection issues in mind for Australia.
Bannis, we've still got a week to go for the next test. I mean, a long break, at least 10 days between the last bit of cricket at Headingley and the next test at Old Trafford.
Do you know what a break is good for? The teams can recuperate, relax, but for us, speculation, wild speculation.
Oh, this is where we come to party, mate.
Crazy news stories. What do you got for me?
Well, the first one, speaking of crazy, the first one has to be David Warner. So the entire country wants him dropped, don't they?
Yeah, I don't know what to do with David Warner. I think you do, so I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to critique your take.
Oh, you got to keep playing him. You absolutely keep playing him. What else are you supposed to do? So these are the options that have been thrown around. The first one is Travis Head goes up to open because he did it in India. He opens one-day cricket as well. I think that'll be
bring in Green,
yes.
If assuming fit, yep.
I think that's a terrible move because what Trav Head's doing in the middle order is really, really valuable at the moment. Mm. He's our most reliable middle order player at the moment. He's got 350s of the summer. The 77 second innings at Leeds was really impactful. The 50 in the first innings at Edgbaston really mattered. Like, it genuinely mattered. We needed that innings at the time. Even though there was obviously some runs coming from Khawaja at the other end, he manages to change the tempo for us, puts them back on his heels. He absolutely has to stay at number five, in my opinion, because he's great for that middle order. Are you on option number one? Are you taking option number one?
I don't know. Next option is the same, but moving Labuschagne up the order instead.
Well, that's option two, moving Labuschagne up, moving Smith one up.
Yeah.
I guess Cam Green bats four, which is probably where he'll end up eventually anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Again, don't like that. Why would you put Marnus up there? He's not going to be better at opening the batting. Why would you think that's a good idea? That's a terrible idea, in my opinion. Option number two, not a thing for me. Well, are you going for it?
Option three is that you then chuck, for this same sort of thing, you chuck the Bison, Mitch Marsh, up to open as well, has opened in white ball cricket too. Again, same reasons. Is it really going to work? Is it not? I guess the argument for is that what's happening right now isn't working. So, you know, what I heard someone say that the definition of stupidity is doing something over and over again and expecting a different result. So,
I'm just going to stop you there. The definition of stupidity is not doing things over and over again. The definition of stupidity is suggesting Mitch Marsh should open at Old Trafford. That's fucking ridiculous. I can't believe people are genuinely entertaining it. Fucking stupid.
Well, the other option is to bring in one of the reserve openers, which is Renshaw or Marcus Harris. Neither have been setting the world alight. The argument for is that it's a genuine opener in there. That's what they're trained to do. It's what they know how to do. You picked him in the squad. Now you got to back him. Argument against is, do you pick your six best batsmen? And I don't know where I stand, because I do like the idea of, like, they haven't played enough cricket. You've got some batsmen going all right. Do you pick your six best? And I'm like, oh yeah, I might do that. But then I don't like the options of who you put up to open with Khawaja. So I'm in a bit of a loss. I have a feeling that they're either going to put Travis Head up to open or they're going to stick with David Warner. That's what I think is happening.
If we're ranking the options of most likely to happen, I would say option number one, most likely to happen, they stick with Warner and Green doesn't play. Option number two, Green does play and opens and Marsh is at six. I would say those are the only two genuine options. Because to your point with the other openers just before, Marcus Harris hasn't played since the middle of May. He hasn't batted for 2 months in the middle. Can't pick it. I just on the Warner thing, I heard some commentary earlier in the week suggesting that Labuschagne and to a lesser extent Smith were struggling because Warner was getting out so early. That's complete fucking myth. But Labuschagne's made 5 centuries with the score at less than 10 when he walked out there. It's a complete fucking myth. And to blame David Warner for the failures of others, I think absolutely lets those guys off the hook when they're the most culpable. I genuinely don't see Warner failed this test. I don't think he failed the other two tests. I know he didn't get big scores, but he batted a long time. And really, that's kind of all you need in England. Van, is fortunately for you as a cricket tragic, as honestly a cricket addict, and maybe you should see somebody about that. The women's Ashes as well has been filling the gap for you in between the men's Ashes. What's been happening? What's the latest? I assume we're just steamrolling over England as we normally do.
Well, England's still alive to us. Australia hadn't lost a T20 in a couple of years, I think. And all of a sudden, England have won 2 in a row to find themselves back in the series. For some reason, so it's a multi-format series, as we've discussed. So there's test matches, the T20s have just finished, and then there's some ODIs to come. But for some reason, they actually celebrate each mini-series within the larger Ashes, which is kind of weird and kind of annoys me for some reason. But anyway, so Australia won the test. So they're up, it's 4 points, and they won one of the T20s. So they're on to 6 points, two points for the white ball format. And England won the last two T20s. So they won the T20 series 2-1, which means it's now 6-4 to Australia. So England, with 3 ODIs to come, England need to win all three or win 2 of them if one of them's rained out to be able to win the series. But I tell you what, you wouldn't have thought England were a chance after that test match. And now they just got a little bit of confidence, and you think some maybe some tremors through the Australian team, a little bit of panic. Still outside odds, England, but they're keeping it alive as they are in the men. So it's pretty exciting, exciting tournament, because Australia have been so hard to beat in that T20 format for years now. So for England to get 2 in a row is pretty amazing.
And you talked about confidence. You think of the confidence that came from that second T20. Probably the best women's T20 ever, that match. Australia, they have this weird thing, Australia. It's probably what the men used to be, and the women have it now, is that even though England were better than them all match in that second T20, just completely dominated, and yet for some reason you kind of always thought Australia was going to win, and they couldn't put them away. And that, I suppose, that's the beauty of this current Australian team, is that they still have that aura, that myth around them. And for England then to go and beat them, to score 180 and hold Australia just under that, Elise Perry, fantastic. Interesting to see how she's managed to revolutionise her game over the past 12 months. But yeah, I just think that you're right. The confidence is the right word, to go and win that match in that fashion, dramatic fashion. Then they chase down a rain-affected match at Lords. I honestly think momentum's with them. It wouldn't surprise me if they pull this series out.
No, they certainly do have momentum. And you know what else is amazing is that Lords crowd, nearly 22,000, and all the three white ball games have had record crowds. So, I mean, that's just incredible to see, and incredible for women's cricket, and they're putting on a hell of a show at the moment.
Did you just say, we might link it on our Twitter, at @OTO_sportpod, the interview, or it wasn't an interview, the little package that the Australian women's cricket team did with their support, one of the supporters who is English, a little girl, and she has this Alyssa Healy cap, and she's like, yeah, I've got this Alyssa Healy cap. And then halfway, 10 seconds in to this little package, she just goes, fact or opinion, are Australia the best team in the world? Fact. Australia is the best. This little English girl, it's absolutely brilliant. We will link it. And all through the interview, she's just sitting there eating hot chips. It's glorious.
Well, I did listen, but in her English accent, it does sound a little bit like she's saying, fuck our opinion. Fuck, Australia is
maybe
the best.
Maybe she was,
team.
I don't know.
Strong language. No, yeah, Ripper and Elise Healy gave us some gloves as well, which is pretty exciting too. So yeah, just excited to see the hype around women's cricket at the moment, Tails. And I think those last three ODIs are going to be absolute cracker. And hopefully Australia can sneak the first one and put the series to bed. But I hope a little bit of me hopes that's not the case for the series. Keep it alive to that last ODI. So, Tails, that is a wrap for Headingley Test before we head to Old Trafford. A little bit of time on our hands. I did need a break from the stress, but it seems like a long time to wait. I'm just hoping that we can just score maybe a cheeky 600 in the first innings and just put it to bed. But there is a lot of stress. There'll be some wild media speculation going around. There's people trying to put out daily podcasts and daily news, so there'll be some crazy things happening. We'll try and keep you abreast of any major stories via the Twitter, OTO_sportpod.
Find us there, and you're a guaranteed follow if you follow us, except unless you're a bot.
Well, you just started following us this week after what? I checked to see where followers
were. I started the account,
anyway,
of course I was following.
Yeah, you'd think so. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Get ready for the Old Trafford test, and hopefully Australia can find its way up 3-1. Talk soon.